It's wonderful as always to see your faces. So this week's Torah reading begins with the words Vayetze Yaakov mei Be'er Sheva. Yaakov left Be'er Sheva, leaving one's home, setting out for the unknown, has been a recurrent theme so far in Genesis. Adam and Eve are expelled from Gan Eden. Avram has to leave his birthplace and the home of his father. And now Yaakov has to leave. His mother tells him he has to flee from his brother Esav, who, she hears, is seeking revenge against Yaakov for stealing the birthright and blessing that is due to his older brother. And his father tells him to go to take a wife from among the daughters of Laban, his mother's brother. The theme of leaving home is not just part of the spiritual journey of these ancestors, but it's a recurrent theme, of course, throughout literature, mythology, and spiritual traditions. Abraham, Moses, Ulysses, Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, the Lion King, and of course, Siddhartha, the Buddha, all have to leave home on their quests. Today, I'd like to reflect on what leaving means in our own lives and in our spiritual practice. What do we have to leave behind? What have we left behind in the past, in the present, or as a daily practice in order to be on whatever path we think we are on? And so that is another question. What path are we on? Are we seeking something at this point in our spiritual practice? So I'll reflect some more on Yaakov's journey and then return to these questions. So Yaakov left Be'er Sheva and immediately came upon a certain place where he stops for the night. Everett Fox translates the next verse as, "He took one of the stones of the place and set it at his head and lay down in that place, and he dreamt. Here a ladder was set upon the earth, its top reaching the heavens, and here messengers of God were going up and down on it, and here Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh was standing over against him. He said, 'I am Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Yitzhak. God promises Yaakov the land he is lying on, many progeny, and says, here, I am with you. I will watch over you wherever you go and will bring you back to this soil. Indeed, I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you,' which is a rather extraordinary promise. Yaakov awoke from his sleep and said, 'Why, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh is in this place, and I did not know it.' Awestruck, he says, 'How awe-inspiring is this place? This is none other than a house of God, and that is the gate of heaven.'" This story raises a question for us about what is the role of a sudden awakening, a vision, an illuminating mystical experience on the spiritual path? Does enlightenment come in a moment of awakening, or is it a long, arduous, and steady path of continuous practice, or both? Either way, through sudden awakening or continuous practice, we are, I think, in need of something that will make it possible for us to see what is so astounding about the ordinary, about moment-to-moment, day-to-day life. This is what Yaakov learns from the dream. Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh is in this place, and I did not know it. This place that he arrives at was not the intended destination of the journey, nor was Yaakov looking for a place to make a sacrifice or to try to connect with Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. However, This experience of his dream led him to look at this ordinary place as the abode of God, the gateway to heaven. He marks the place with a pillar. Is this truly an extraordinary place with a history of extraordinary encounters, as some traditions interpret it as the place where Abraham went to sacrifice Isaac? Or is it a reminder that there are gateways to more expanded awareness every place, everywhere we go? So why does it take extraordinary flashes of awareness or years of continuous practice to see the astounding nature of each moment in our lives? Usually, our perceptions are shaped by our expectations. This gives us many shortcuts without which we could not make quick decisions and be efficient in our routine tasks. But it also robs us of seeing what is right in front of us. If something is particularly unusual, quite outside our expectations, we will stop and look. A bush that is burning but not consumed just might get our attention if it truly is outside our expectations. But often we don't know the astounding nature of life unless we intentionally take a nature walk, intentionally pay attention. And often we talk with each other without appreciating the precious gift of human life and human connection. Art, literature, theater, and particularly religious ritual take things out of their ordinary places and frame or highlight them in a particular way that makes us notice what is extraordinary about this life that is unfolding in us, around us, in each moment. So tonight we'll bless the Shabbat candles, making it a special time, a day of recognizing the splendor of this world. If we did not light candles and say blessings, perhaps weeks could go by without our recognizing the blessing of human life in a world with other people. So once a week, we're commanded to leave behind, take leave of all our work, our usual tasks, so that we can see what is extraordinary about ordinary life. So this comes back to the question, why do we have to leave? When we are in a new place, we can't rely on the old habits and familiar expectations. We're out of our comfort zone. Everything can be different. We can't do things automatically. We have to be aware of what we are doing and seeing in order to survive. The theme of leaving home is, of course, part of the Buddha's story and Moses' story. Many Buddhist stories are about people who leave their homes to become wandering beggars and monastics. But is that a necessary part of practice? Is there some other way to be on the path of continuous practice? So this week I listened to one of Norman Fisher's talks on Dogen's teaching on continuous practice. In it, he addresses both the theme of the unspectacular nature of enlightenment and the theme of leaving. The unspectacular path of continuous practice leads you to recognize that enlightenment is right here in this moment, in the unspectacular and ordinary experience of life unfolding right here, right now. Dogen, who founded the Soto School of Zen, as well as my teachers who are either part of that tradition or influenced by it, have had similar responses anytime questions have come up about spectacular flashes of enlightenment. The responses usually don't get distracted by that. Certainly, if you seek it, if you hope to have a kind of mystical experience you have never had, you'll suffer. And if you had it once and you wanted to come back again, you will surely suffer. These teachers have all been proponents of what Dogen calls continuous practice, bringing our attention to every moment of our lives. In the Buddhist tradition, including Dogen's writings, the need to leave home is described as part of this experience. So I'll quote from one of Norman's talks in which he's quoting Dogen's fascicle on this. In the continuous practice of the way of Buddha ancestors, do not be concerned about whether you are a great or modest hermit, whether you are brilliant or dull. Just forsake name and gain forever, and don't be bound by myriad conditions. Do not wait for great enlightenment, as great enlightenment is the tea and rice of daily activity. So Norman says, in other words, don't wait for it. Just open your eyes, and it's right there. And then Dogen goes on, if you have a home, leave your home. If you have beloved ones, leave them. If you have fame, abandon it. If you have gain, escape from it. If you have fields, get rid of them. Well, this, of course, sounds very harsh and horrible to us. Yet our Jewish forebears, Abraham, Yaakov, Yosef, Moses, all left their homes as they embarked on their spiritual journeys. And in the Jubilee year, we're instructed to give up what we have gained. Our tradition also has images of giving up the things we think we truly own, the things we hope we can hold on to. Spiritual practice reminds us that we never owned the land. It prepares us for the recognition that we cannot hold on to people and things forever. And yet, the great irony is that we are told that all this leaving ends up showing us that enlightenment is right here in each moment. So why do we have to leave it all? You may recall a poem I read a few months ago called Free and Easy, a spontaneous song by Venerable Lama Gendun Rinpoche in the Tibetan tradition. And he was one of the Tibetans who did have to leave his home as a refugee. But he wrote, and there's a beautiful picture of his beautiful smiling face that goes with this poem. He wrote, "Don't search any further, looking for the great awakened elephant who is already resting quietly at home in front of your own hearth." So why do we have to leave home at all? We could say that leaving home is a metaphor for leaving behind the habitual patterns of mind and reactivity that we need to let go of in order to greet life more directly in each moment. We could say it means leaving your comfort zone. And when I thought about these very harsh, leave your home, leave your family, I thought, well, I really don't know the social and historical and day-to-day context of life in those times, which was very difficult in these, a lot of this grew out of the teachings of Chinese teachers who really went through times of terrible political oppression and turmoil. And life was so difficult. So I don't think there was a possibility of saying, hey, I'm going to go on a retreat for a week. I'll see you in a week. You know, it may have been that the only way to have the freedom to practice was to leave home. So So if we look back at the story of Yaakov from this perspective, we see how he was caught even from prenatal life in a particular type of pattern, a pattern of doing whatever he needed to do to get what he wanted, any way he could get it. Prenatally, he and his twin were struggling in Rebekah's womb. He was delivered after Esav, holding on to his older brother's heel, as if trying to hold his brother back from being the firstborn. He bought his brother's birthright, and he went along with his mother's plan to deceive his father into getting the blessing of the firstborn. He was literally raised by his mother to deceive in order to pursue his fortune. He is, of course, tricked by his uncle, and after many years of laboring as Laban's shepherd, he realizes he must leave once again and he's ready to return home. Through trickery, he acquires more flocks and he flees once again. But returning home means that he once more becomes vulnerable to attack from his brother Esav. In next week's Torah reading, Vayishlach, we'll read of Yaakov's taking leave again, this time crossing over the river from where his wives and children and all his possessions are, so that he is alone, when he suddenly finds a man wrestling with him in a struggle that transforms him physically and emotionally. But even the spectacular moment of transformation from Yaakov into Yisrael does not confer lasting change. Yaakov alternates between his two identities until his death many years later. Without continuous practice, I guess, great flashes of awareness do not sustain lasting change. So in his talk, Norman goes on to describe the path of continuous practice in relationships. It is a path of kindness and generosity and caring for each other for the sake of one another. Loving without needing the person, the other person, to fulfill an unfulfilled need of our own. Continuous practice, Norman says, means to forget about who you are, who you want to be, who you're supposed to be, and just throw your whole body and mind, moment by moment, into every moment of your life. It's not about needing something that we're never going to get. In this way, Norman says, you develop a warmth and caring in your living. You end up loving and respecting your life, your body and spirit, and all the circumstances that have brought you to this moment, whatever they are. And you become awakened with all beings. So here are some questions we can discuss. Either we can break up into groups of two, or we can discuss them all together. Have you ever felt you had to leave something behind in order to pursue your practice or your dream? What has helped you experience the extraordinary nature of your life? And how has your practice influenced the way you live in your relationships? So any of those could be a prompt. So we'll take a moment.